Have you ever felt so overwhelmed with the stress and pressure of the complicated business details surrounding the planning for a loved one to enter long-term care? Have you ever felt the pressure of being unprepared and faced with the final planning and arrangements for funeral or memorial services of a loved one? Have you ever been so overwhelmed by the details surrounding estate planning and estate settlements and so forth? If so, stay tuned to learn how you can be best prepared and have a plan when we find ourselves faced with the pressures of personal end-of-life challenges.
Welcome to Planning for Tomorrow. We take life's most difficult questions, concerns, and challenges and turn them into manageable nuggets of information so that you can make the best decisions when you are planning for tomorrow. You can contact us at pftradio@gmail.com. You can check us out on Facebook, Planning for Tomorrow Radio, or if you're calling from the local listening area, 304-399-8255, or long distance, 877-420-8255. Well, good morning and welcome to Planning for Tomorrow. I am your host, Fred Kitchen, and I tell you what, we go through a lot of things in life sometimes that really give us some challenges, and today we're going to talk about some of those things that affect all of us. We've talked about a lot of different issues on our shows, and today I think we've got a guest that's going to be, just going to bring a lot of insight to some personal things that affects a lot of us. And I'd like to take just a minute and tell you about who our guest is. We have Colleen Ellis. And Colleen is from Indiana, and we'll talk to her here in just a little bit, and she can tell us a little bit more about what she does. But in the fall of 2011, Colleen had released a book called Pet Parents. We're going to be talking about pet care today and loss of pet and also about grief and unconditional love. So we're going to talk about some of those things. But also Colleen is going to tell us a little bit about the first funeral home for pets here in the United States. And I think that's pretty interesting to be able to talk about. Colleen, are you with us on the phone?
Good morning, Fred. How are you?
I'm good. How are you this morning?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for letting me join you this morning.
Oh, well, thank you for being our guest. We really appreciate it. And I think that you're going to be able to bring a lot of insight to a lot of listeners today that are pet owners, and in some new terminology that I've been hearing is pet parents.
Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about that also, but before we get into some questioning and stuff like that, let's get a little bit of background about, tell us a little bit about how you got started and how you come to start the pet funeral home and from there.
Okay, very good. Well, gosh, I almost hate to admit this to you, Fred, but I'm probably now about 25 years in total in the funeral business.
Uh-huh.
And if I was standing in front of you, I would tell you, you know what, I started when I was six.
So oh, wow.
I need you to roll with that one. So anyway, I'm about 25 years in the funeral business, and about 15 of those were spent solidly in the human side of the business,
mm-hmm.
a little bit of what you do.
Right.
And so I became very impassioned with knowing about what people are doing in honoring the life they shared with their loved ones, with their parents, with their spouses, with their family, with their friends. And I love that part. I love the part of honoring the time we spend together and celebrating our lives. And I love that. And probably about 10 years ago, 11 years ago, being a person who has no two-legged children, all I have are four-legged children, I began to look at the pet death care space, and I began to say, where are those facilities, where are those places that treat the pet families exactly like we treat the human families? And I wasn't finding those places, and I'm not talking a crematory, I'm not talking a cemetery, I'm talking a place where I can go and I can have a ritual, I can go and I can know that I'm safe there in crying about the loss of my little dog or the loss of my pussycat or the loss of my bunny, whatever it may be. And so I wanted that place that would create an experience for families that they come and honor the life they shared with a four-legged family member.
Right. You know, it's interesting, Colleen. I'll reflect back as you're talking there, probably about 15 years ago, maybe 20. There's a veterinary friend of mine, owns some veterinary clinics here in town, and he mentioned to me, of course, working in the funeral business, he says, you know what, you need to have a pet funeral home. And at that time, you know, let's go back 15 years or so. That wasn't the most popular thing to be talked about in our industry, in the funeral business, because, you know, a human side was what we were focusing on. But I think you've touched on something that is, for many, their pets are their children. Their pets are their family.
And Fred, I got to tell you, and you and I both being in the business for as long as we have, I got to tell you, I wish I had a dime for every time I had a gentleman come in and say, and he kind of whispers and he looks over his shoulder to make sure nobody's listening, and he says, you know, I love that dog more than I love my wife.
Wow.
And I'm going to tell you, I wish I had a dime for every time I heard that.
Well, that dog can't sue him for divorce, can he?
Oh, no, absolutely not. And, you know, my favorite joke is put your wife in a trunk and put your dog in the trunk and open it up and see who's happy to see you.
That's right, exactly. I guarantee it'll be the dog.
Exactly. So it's the unconditional love they give us. It's the dignity and respect we give them in life. And pets have become family members. You know, mm-hmm. the statistic on this, interestingly enough. And maybe what I'm going to do is go ahead and throw this out because it almost kind of sets the tone for the next hour we're going to spend together. 62% of people have a pet.
Wow.
Okay? So that means 38% they don't. And that doesn't mean maybe they don't like them. Maybe it just means their living situation or their lifestyle doesn't allow them to have a pet right now. So, but 38% may not quite understand the relationship we share with our pets.
Right.
Look at that 62% again.
That's a huge number.
Huge number. 83% of that 62% is one of me. They're
wow.
a parent. They're wow. a pet parent. We are a self-proclaimed group that loves to stand up and proudly say, I'm a pet parent.
Right.
And the definition is, and interestingly enough about a pet parent, it really spans all demographics. It spans everything. It could be a 9-year-old little girl with her gerbil. And she says, I treated this little guy like my little brother, or like my, you know, I cared for him like a kid, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
So the demographic of a pet parent spans everything. But
right.
we're the ones that at the heart of it say, this little pet, whatever it is a part of my family.
Right. You know, I have some friends, and then I've met some people recently that are some individuals that would be in law enforcement, have been in law enforcement, have been in other industries that we would, as a society, would look at them as being, for lack of a better term, the tough guys, you know. But they have these pets, these dogs, that are so close to them. And like you said, in many instances, closer than their wife. But you know, It's affecting everyone, and for, like I said, when we go back 15, 20 years, you know, there were probably some individuals, that number of 62% that had a pet, who knows what that number was then, and who knows what that pet parent's number was, but you think back, it may not have been as cool to talk about back then as it is today about being a pet parent or about having a pet that you're that close to, that you're willing. Look at the money that people were, and you may have better data on this, that people were spending to keep our pets alive and to keep our pets healthy.
$52 billion this year.
Wow, big number.
Yep, it's huge. And you know what's interesting about that number is only inclusive of those things that I have a choice on, such as vet care and toys and grooming and stuff like that. That number doesn't even reflect what people are doing and the one thing that is that's a given in the life I have with my pet, and that's the death of my pet.
Right.
So it's an astounding number. You know what I want to talk about? You just brought this up, and I want to talk about this one second because mm-hmm. I've been very actively involved with the release of the protocols within the police departments across the United States. And
okay.
as a matter of fact, tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock in Anderson, Indiana, which is just right north of Indianapolis here, unfortunately, about a month ago, two canine officers lost their life within about a week and a half of each other, and they lost their life while they were in duty.
Oh, wow.
So tomorrow there is going to be an absolutely unbelievable service, and I've participated in two of these here in Indianapolis. Not participated, I conducted. And so the service tomorrow afternoon, there's 250 canine officers coming from across the country. They're lining the streets of Anderson, Indiana, to pay their respects not only to the dogs, and I think this is a key part, Fred, not only to the dogs and the service and what they so unselfishly gave to not only their department but also to the community of Anderson, Indiana, and the work that they did, all to get a tennis ball. That's how those canines are trained. It's
right.
just to come back and get the joy of that tennis ball after they've apprehended a suspect. And so tomorrow afternoon, paying respect to the duty that they gave to us and the work that they gave to that community, but also, and more importantly, paying respect to those two handlers and these dogs that for 24/7 they went in the car with them and went to work. They came mm-hmm. home at night. They slept in the house. They were a part of a family at night, and in the day they went to work.
Right. Colleen, we need to take just a quick commercial break, and if we can do that, I want to. When we come back, I definitely want to talk a little bit more about what we're talking about here, about the services for those pets tomorrow, for those canine units tomorrow. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Super Talk Radio, 94.1 FM and AM 930. And we are back to Planning for Tomorrow, and I want to make sure that everyone knows Planning for Tomorrow is a media resource of Henson Mortuary, and you can look at our website at hensonmortuary.com, and you can also go to Planning for Tomorrow Radio's website at pftradio.com. A lot of good information there, and there's information about our guest that's on our show today, Colleen Ellis. Colleen is the owner of Two Hearts Pet Loss Center. And Colleen, are you still with us?
I am.
I want to talk just a little bit more. I want to go into a little bit more detail about, you were talking about the Anderson, Indiana services for the canine officers. That sounds like that's going to be some event. And you said that's your second time being involved?
No, we actually had, in my day-to-day activities here with my little pet funeral home, we actually had two canines during that 10-year that I was in the day-to-day operations. We had two canines that were killed within about a year and a half of each other. So
okay.
I've, again, personally facilitated two services here and then have been involved with those up in Anderson tomorrow.
Wow, sounds like it's going to be interesting. You said there's 250 canine officers coming from around the country. So that means that's where exactly is this going to be located at?
Anderson, Indiana. If you're on a clock with Indianapolis, Indiana, it's at about 1 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
and it's just a little bit up the road, maybe about 15, 20 miles up the road from the north side of the city. And it's a human funeral home up there that does have a pet loss center attached to their facility.
Mm-hmm.
So they will be conducting the service, and there'll be a processional that will happen as well as a service. And they'll process out from the funeral home, and they'll process over to a church that they're going to be having the service at, where all the officers then will come. They're also bringing their canine officers as well, and then, of course, open to the public to come in and pay their respects too.
Yes, it's a big deal.
Yes.
It is a big deal. You know, that kind of goes into something I want to talk a little bit about. You know, the whole reason for having this service, there's going to be, you know, like we talked about, that 62% that's listening that's going to say, oh, man, what an incredible idea, what a great thing to do. And the 38% says, you know, I'm not really sure about that, whether it's, you know, a pet is really worth having a service for and all that stuff. But let's talk a little bit about the grief process that affects pet owners. And do you feel like that it differs in any way from the loss of a human family member? You know, we've lost, you know, grandmother has passed away, but then, you know, our pet, the family pet, or even this officer, this canine officer has passed away. So do you feel like there's any type of is grief any different for those individuals?
You know, grief is grief. What makes the loss of a pet different is a grief called a disenfranchised grief, because I can tell anybody I meet on the street that my father died, and 99% of the time I'm going to get a message of sympathy, and I'm going to get a little pat on the shoulder, and I'm sorry. But if I tell the wrong person that my dog died, they may turn around and look at me and say, what are you talking about? It's just a dog, or go get another one, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, what on earth would you be sad about that for? Dogs are a dime a dozen. Go get yourself another one. So it becomes a little bit more of a grief that you withhold.
Right.
You're not sure that you've got the right person that you can talk to about that.
Right. That's got to be a real challenge for pet owners also, because, you know, like I said, you're feeling something that's real. You're feeling something that is taking you on an emotional journey, like a loss of any kind.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that many times on the show here about loss and grief. And, you know, grief comes in many levels. Grief can be from, you know, a divorce that maybe someone, you know, you've had to sever ties with a whole other part of a family, or friendships and relationships and things. And, you know, so now we're talking about pet loss. So the process is all the same. But then you have these individuals that are just, you hate to even talk about it
right.
to certain people, because you know that they're probably going to downplay your grief.
They're going to downplay it, and they're going to shame me.
Right.
And so therefore I'll retreat, and instead of dealing with my grief and instead of finding somebody that will listen, I just assume that everybody's going to see it the same way, and they're all going to say I'm crazy, and they're all going to say, I told you that cat made you nuts, and now look at you, you're crying.
Right.
You know, so now we get those sorts of things, and when all actuality, all I want to do is find somebody that will listen, because many a times There's so many situations, Fred, where the animal represents security, or the animal represents that was the thing that was my constant, you know, companion during my cancer treatment. Mm-hmm. That was the thing that saw me through a divorce. That was the only thing that gave me unconditional love in an abusive situation. Whatever it may be, it's a very, very real, very big love, and it's a very big love that is so hard to put your finger on because so many people don't understand it if you've not been a part of it.
Absolutely. You know, I recall, and I'm kind of being a little transparent here, but I can recall some time back when my father-in-law had come down with cancer, and he passed away. And here I am being the funeral director in the family. I'm trying to be strong for everyone. I'm trying to, you know, you don't want to really bring anyone else down because you're trying to be the tower, right? And you know, we have a Yorkshire Terrier, and being honest with you, that Yorkie was the person that I vented to, you know, and I was able to talk to during that process, which helped me to help others. And I think a lot of people don't really realize that relationship there a lot of times, and that especially when that relationship deteriorates through loss, how hard that is.
Yes, you know, it's so funny you say that because I can't tell you of the thousands and thousands and thousands of families that I've walked the journey with and looked in the faces of these little precious little creatures and said to the family, oh my gosh, this little baby has a lot of secrets in those head, doesn't
oh yeah
head, doesn't she? And boy, they go, yep, just it's all safe right there.
Yeah,
knew it was safe. Yeah,
and I think that's one of the reasons that we see a lot of families that have that are pet parents. You know, that there's that bond there between them because they're not going to be able to tell those things, those inner feelings that you've shared with them. So you know, they do bring a lot of comfort.
So true. You know, and there's another little angle I'm going to segue into this. Mm-hmm. While you asked the question about is the grief the same? It's the same, but there's also things that I call the intricacies of pet loss. Those little nuances that make us different, and there's four of them.
Let's talk about that.
The first one is what I call the presence of the absence. It's that deafening silence that the first time we come home, and even your little small Yorkie, those little guys, even then, they take up a huge, huge space within our home.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the first time we come home, and that little fur creature's not there. And it's, again, the presence of the absence. It's the loss of that little fur being in the house. And that segues into generally one of the very first conversations I'll have with a family, because I know this happens, Fred, and I'll say to the family the next day or 2 days later, have you heard them come through the house again?
Oh, wow.
Invariably, they go, oh, my God, I thought I was going crazy. I thought I was losing my mind. But I'm telling you, I heard them coming down the hallway last night. I heard their nails on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that presence of the absence where that silence becomes so loud and so deafening that you hear them. Hear
right.
Things. And so, but you got to watch who you tell that to.
They'll think you're nuts.
Turn around, and yeah, they'll deem you crazy.
Exactly.
They'll deem you that, yeah.
What would be the second one?
The second one is the grief ranking.
Mm-hmm.
So the second one is when people come in and they almost feel guilty because they say, you know what, I grieved more over the loss of this dog than I did the loss of my dad.
Right.
And they feel guilty about that because they've ranked this. I've had so many situations where they've said I should be grieving more over a human loss than I should a pet loss because that's what society tells me to do.
Right.
And sometimes that's just not the case. And so they wrestle with that.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives them that internal conflict that goes on with that wrestling. So there's that one.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is the questions of faith. You know,
wow.
And as I always refer to, opinions are like belly buttons. Everybody has one, right?
Exactly.
So many times when I say to the wrong person, I'm excited to see my pet in heaven again, I get a religious debate that starts in.
Right.
And we have to, you know, is it really true? Is it not really true? And, you know, and then we begin this debate. When at the end of the day, as a pet parent, all I want to know, all I want to have in my heart is the hope of believing in something that nobody really knows the answer.
Don't you think when people are, especially, and just pulling the debate completely out of it, of faith, but don't you think in many instances when someone is saying, I just want to see my pet in heaven again, they're just looking for some form of comfort.
Absolutely.
They're looking for some form of comfort, and, you know, that may be a good thing that we can talk about, because I want to get to your number four, but, you know, how do people, when that does come up, as opposed to debating someone who is grieving, you know, which is not the thing to do. You know, we wouldn't, you know, hopefully we wouldn't debate someone on an issue. You know, their dad has just died and they've made a comment that we may not agree with. So we're going to go ahead and inflict a little bit more harm, you know, on them or a little more pain on them by debating them over something. You know, what are some things that they can do to kind of deflect, you know, or people can kind of maybe take the question a different direction as opposed to debating them over that?
Well, and are you talking about me handling it as somebody saying it's me and I just...
Yeah.
Okay, so, well, there's two ways to handle this. Number one, what I always say, too, and regardless if this is a situation of inviting people to a ritual memorial ceremony for a pet or me having a conversation about a pet going to heaven, my first thing is, you know what, I'm not asking you to agree with me or disagree with me right now. What I'm asking you to do is respect me as a pet parent, respect the loss that I've just gone through. And I need to explore that in my own way. I need to honor that in my own way. And it needs to be about me right now, not about you.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
So that's one of the ways that I handle that. The other way that I handle it when I'm given that question, because I don't generally know where a family's at on that topic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when a family says to me, do you think pets go to heaven? I don't want it to be about my answer, Fred. It's not my answer. And so I turn it back around and I say, why don't you tell me what you think?
Mm-hmm.
And I get, the first thing that they say to me, I'm going to walk you through this, the first thing they say to me is, well, you know what my mom says or what my pastor says or what some, you know, person says, and they begin to give me that answer. And I say, no, I want to know what you think.
Right.
And so they'll look over their shoulder and they'll make sure that nobody's looking and then they'll whisper to me, I think they do.
Yeah. Like I said, they're seeking comfort at that point.
Yeah.
You know, and we see the same thing in the funeral business when we're dealing with families a lot of times. They'll make comments, families will make comments, you know, seeking comfort for this huge void that just happened in their life. And it may be something that we as individuals may not see the same way as them, but to bring additional hurt upon them is and the timing of doing that is maybe not the best timing, best place to do that.
Right, exactly. You know what? And at the end of it, it's believing in the mystery.
Right, exactly.
Mystery, and all I want is that.
Exactly. What was number four? We've got to take a quick break, but what was number four?
Bond we share with our pets.
What was that again?
Bond.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Colleen, we're going to take a quick break here, and you'll be able to join us for the last half of the hour.
Absolutely.
All right. We're going to come back here in a little bit. We've got Colleen Ellis with Two Hearts Pet Loss Center with us, and you're listening to 94.1 FM and AM 930 WRVC. And we are back to Planning for Tomorrow. I am Fred Kitchen, and we have Colleen Ellis on the show with us, and she is from Two Hearts Pet Loss Center in Indiana. And Colleen, are you still with us?
I am. Thanks, Fred.
Thank you for staying along with us. And you know, I want to kind of go back to where we went, where we were at before the break, and we were talking about the four. Tell me what those were called again.
I call them the intricacies of pet loss.
Okay, the intricacies of pet loss. And number four, we were talking about bond.
Yeah, the special bond. And again, we already talked that 62% of people have a pet and 38% don't.
Uh-huh.
So if your entire support circle consists of all of the 38%,
mm-hmm.
then it may be a situation that people aren't going to they didn't understand the life you shared with the animal,
mm-hmm.
not going to understand the grief that you also experienced when that animal dies.
Right.
And
right.
So it's really making sure that when you turn to a support system, either you set the ground rules that says, listen, I know you don't understand it because you weren't there, but I need you to respect me.
Right.
So you either do that or you find somebody that can have some empathy with the loss that you experienced and can be there to give you some healthy support.
Exactly. And, you know, some of the things I want to ask you about also are what are some of the things that families, what are some of the things that they do, since that is your primary focus is pet loss, what are some of the things that families do to memorialize their pet, type of rituals, type of memorialization and, you know, personalization, things like that?
You know, Fred, it's all over the board, and I could probably spend the next 4 hours with you on this.
It's probably kind of an anything that goes, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And really what my role is as a pet loss professional is to give them not only the permission,
mm-hmm.
but also to help give them some ideas, because it's not one of those things that society accepts right now.
Right.
It's something that we may have in our heart of hearts. But I got to tell you, the one question that every reporter's always asked me is, how do you invite people to a funeral for a dog, or what does a funeral for a dog look like?
Uh-huh.
That look like? And I'm going to tell you, before I tell you what the funeral looks like, I'm going to tell you the comment that I get from people that come to my funerals,
uh-huh.
come to my services. A lot of them come up to me afterwards, and they're almost kind of sheepish as they come up to me, and they say, I got to tell you, I got to confess to you, I came here today because I wanted to see what a funeral for a cat looked like.
Right.
Couldn't imagine it. And then they look around, and then they say to me, I can only hope my services is as beautiful as this one was today.
Right. Right.
And that's so heartwarming. But it's really setting down, and I always like to refer to the poem The Dash with families that says, tell me about the dash of the cat. Tell me about the life that you shared with that cat. Tell me about when you sum up that pussycat in one sentence, what is that pussycat, what do you remember? And I get all things like with a dog. I'll never forget, I got the statement, she was my little Peter Pan mixed with Dennis the Menace.
Oh, wow.
You know, little statements like that. So
right.
You take that and you say, now how are we gonna put that into a ritual to honor that little pet?
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times it's, you know, it's formal settings. Okay, where people will come together. We'll actually have a little service. We'll have a eulogy, and the eulogy is, you know, where the little animal started from and what their life was and the lessons we learned.
Right.
Learned so many lessons from them, all the way to one of my very favorite stories is a family who wanted to scatter the cremains of the dog. And as I was listening to the story about this dog, it was a husky named Sparky, and all she could talk about is how that little squirt would get out of the yard and run down a county road and go see all the neighbors and, you know, really create a little bit of a commotion. And, of course, she'd get in the car and yell at him, and he'd go taking off even faster. It was part of their process, you know. So when she was talking about the scattering of these cremains and how all the neighbors have really been just so supportive of her in this loss, I said, well, why don't you have a little bit of a special time together to honor Sparky? And if you're going to scatter, there seemed to be that one county road he went down. Why don't you drive down that road and scatter it down that road in a procession?
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what they did. She had mimosas on a Sunday morning. They shared Sparky stories, and then everybody got in their car, drove down that road, and scattered those ashes.
Wow. So, I mean, you're like you said, you're just being a facilitator, and you're really giving them the permission that they need because they feel so like they can't do this or they shouldn't do this. So the permission is a big part of allowing them to create a service that has meaning.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And it's just having my ears and, you know, and you know this, Fred, given what you do, you don't listen with your ears mostly. You listen with your eyes and your heart.
Exactly.
So when I hear somebody say this is going to be the first year that those flowers are actually going to bloom in that flower garden because he always laid there and killed them. And so when I hear that, I say, well, why don't we put a little rock there and we call it Fluffy Spot?
Right.
Oh, so you always know when you look out there, you still see him there. So it's just listening, and it's listening with your heart. And
right.
And them to create something that's going to honor that life they shared.
And you know what I find that's interesting a lot of times, and we're seeing it more and more in funeral service, and of course, naturally, it's like anything else. It has to be offered for someone to know it exists. But, you know, we're seeing a lot of things, even with pet, I'm sure you've seen it, where people are wanting some type of keepsakes, something
yes.
to, you know, something to remember their pet by. You know, yeah, we've had this service, and it was very moving, but, you know, I would like to have something that helps me remember my pet for many years to come.
Right, that's exactly right. And it's, you know, it's mimicking. Everything is mimicking what we do for our two-legged family members, and we're wanting to give them, because we call these little four-legged creatures, we call them family members. So I want to wear a necklace that, you know, and in my world it can be a little bit different because the little cremation urn necklace that I wear, I actually have the hair and the fur of all my living and deceased animals.
Wow.
So I always have them with me. Our one of my favorite gentlemen that I work with is Thumbies, or in
right.
my world it's called Buddies.
Buddies, right.
Yeah, we can actually take a paw print or a nose print. Do you know why we do nose prints on jewelry?
Let's talk about that.
We do nose prints on jewelry because an animal's nose print is like our thumbprint.
They're wow, so unique.
Like.
Wow, that's interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah.
We offer the Buddies the keepsakes at our funeral home also, and it's amazing the families that when it's mentioned to them, they're like, oh, my gosh, I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know I could do it. And then it goes, again, you've got to give them that permission that, you know, it's okay, you know, because it is going to generate some conversation. People are going to say, wow, what a beautiful necklace.
Yes. Okay.
What is that?
My husband, he actually has cufflinks, and on one pair of cufflinks, he has the paw of one of our living little doggies right now, who is just the light of his eye, and then another set of cufflinks actually has the nose of our big golden retriever we just lost, and I tell you what, when he wears those, he pulls his suit coat up just a little bit so everybody
so people can see.
Yeah, and then he gets to start a conversation.
Right. So, yeah. Buddy, so let's talk a little bit about some of those things. Buddies is the jewelry that can have a nose print or a paw print placed on it. And then also, I know we utilize the tribute blankets, you know, the blankets that you can actually have a woven jacquard blanket with the pet's picture on it also. What are some of the other things that you guys offer?
You know, the of course the urns. And when I say that to you, the other thing that I really like to point out, because an urn is an urn, okay? And and urns, you know, we buy those because they fit into our home, or they resemble the personality of the pet because they're colorful or they're stoic or whatever. But really, on those pieces, what brings such warmth to me when I get a you know, work with a family on an urn It's the fact that we sit down and we get a personalized. I had one family, we had an urn, have an urn that we carry that's got little paw prints that go around the circumference of the urn.
Mm-hmm.
And so she sat down and we began to talk about the dash of the dog. And I said, why don't you, and this is where I always like to start when I talk with families, share with me the pet's nicknames. And of course, I always put a disclaimer on it too. And I say, now I need to have those refrigerator quality.
Right.
You know those, because we
all
have those other nicknames.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We have those for family members, don't we?
Of course we do.
Okay.
Of course we do. So I said, I want to know the nicknames, and oh my gosh, they got on a roll, and there's 13 little paw prints that go around the circumference of this urn. So mm-hmm. what they did is they went home, and the beauty of this piece was not the paw prints that went around it. They went home as a family and came up with 13 nicknames.
Wow.
They called that dog over the lifetime, and that's what we put above and below each of those paw prints. So there's the beauty of that side, the personalization of
mm-hmm.
that.
Right.
I've actually had and was very proud to be a part of a creation of an urn, and it was for the families who said, hey, listen, our dog liked to be outside, or there was a special spot the pussycat liked to lay under a tree and watch the birds, but I want to put her out there, but I want to know if we move mm-hmm. that she can come with me.
Right, good idea.
Yeah, so I got together with my rock manufacturer here in the Indianapolis area, and we actually drilled out through a rock and put an urn in there, and it's actually PVC pipe, but it does beautiful because it's water resistant. And so then we can put the cremains in there, and when that family moves, they can pick that little rock up and take it to their next place.
So they can have that in their garden and then move that along with them when they move from somewhere else.
Exactly.
That's a good idea, because we are a transient society today. That's one of the things that we're seeing more and more with cremation and cremation rising, you know, is a lot of that is because families are transient, you
know? Right, exactly. And, of course, with pet people, you know, we're kind of, many a times we may have our offices in our home and we don't go to an office, we don't go anywhere, and so our entire social circle is our animal. And
right.
So that we want to make sure that they come with us wherever we go and be with us at the end of the day. The other difference in my world versus your world is in my world, I do carry a lot of human urns. I do carry a lot
right.
of extra large urns, but the reason I carry those is not necessarily for large animals.
Mm-hmm.
They're what I call a family urn.
Right.
As I know that my little babies are going to go with me. I think I can share that with you. They're going to go with me when I go, and I want them to be with me.
Right.
So I always kind of joke. I say, gosh, I didn't want it to sound like I had beer cans in my casket down the church aisle way.
No. Yeah. Ruin your reputation, Colleen.
Absolutely. So hey. We carry these large urns where, in as I tell a family, mm-hmm. they lived under one roof in life. Let's mm-hmm. let them live under one roof in death.
Colleen, we need to take just a quick break, our last break of the hour, and I want you to come back with us and us tie up some other things we want to talk about here for the last 15 minutes or so. You good with that?
I'm so good.
Okay. See we'll you. Be right back. You're listening to 94.1 FM and AM 930 WRVC. And we are back to Planning for Tomorrow. I'm Fred Kitchen, your host. And, again, we want to make mention that Planning for Tomorrow Radio is a media resource of Henson Mortuary here in Huntington, West Virginia. And you can check out the Planning for Tomorrow website at pftradio.com and learn a lot. There's a lot of resources that are available to you. And believe it or not, we're going to take a lot of our resources that we're gaining with regard to pet loss and kind of put some of that information on the website for you also, because we think it's very important that we encompass everything that has to do with loss and family and not just the human pet loss side. Colleen, are you still with us?
I am. Hello.
Hello, and glad that you are with us today. Colleen is the owner of Two Hearts Pet Loss Center in Indiana, and we've been talking about a lot of good information here, hopefully interesting information to our listeners, Colleen.
Thank you so much. You know what? I heard you talk about the planning, and I've been listening to your infomercials and stuff, and I want to get over to you a guide to planning ahead that I have created for the pet side of things.
Absolutely.
Resource site. So I'll send that over to you, and you can get that posted.
Yeah, we'll make that available to our listeners right away, because we have a lot of listeners that are utilizing the website. It's been really interesting to see in a year's time the amount of usage on that website. So it shows us that there is a need for information. People are looking for information. They want to make the best decisions and when they're faced with some of these issues.
Exactly right, and I'm going to do a shameless plug right now.
Mm-hmm,
my
go ahead.
Book that's out, which is Pet Parents, A Journey Through Unconditional Love and Grief.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a whole chapter in there that guides the family on the questions that they need to ask, not only themselves, but either their veterinarian or their pet death care provider, to make sure that they're getting the services and they're getting the treatment that they want for themselves and for their pet.
Wow.
So there's a whole checklist of questions in there. The Guide to Planning Ahead that I'm going to email to you is also a wonderful guide, a wonderful foundational guide for a family begin to think, how do I want to honor my pet when they die? What do I want to do? What are the things that I want to consider and I want to make sure that I'm prepared for?
We'll definitely make those guides available through the PFT Radio website, and they will also have it available at Henson Mortuary if anyone would want to pick that up, Colleen. And what I'll also do, Colleen, I want to make sure that your book, we'll have a link on the website to where people can go to your site and pick up that book if they want to do that, order that book from you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And it's a beautiful book. I will tell you to have a box of Kleenexes there because obviously I'm going to walk you through some of the families I've worked with.
Uh-huh.
Behind each chapter, I'm going to give you some things that you can do as a pet parent to make sure that you're doing what you need to do. Again, questions to ask or how do you have a funeral? It's just a variety of chapters that really is a nice guide and a nice little resource book to get people through that time that we don't like to think about.
Right. I've got a question for you here. I mentioned to you a minute ago that my wife and I I have two daughters, and we have a Yorkie that is now, he just turned 13 years old. And, you know, you get to those ages, you start getting a little nervous.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had him before we had our daughters. So now our daughters are growing up with Winston. And what are some of the things that we can do to help children when they are grieving a loss? Because, you know, we're talking about human side and we're talking about pet parents. But what about the children that, you know, have these animals?
Well, first of all, as we all know, children are organic mourners.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes as adult protectors of the child, we think maybe we should shield them for that loss, or we should maybe not, you know, they're too young to understand, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And children are always, they always get lost. They do, regardless of age.
They get it better than we do, don't they?
Yeah. Absolutely they do. We start getting life experiences in the way.
Exactly.
It's just, it doesn't work for us. But children are organic mourners. So a couple of things. First of all, having them fully involved in the process with the animal. And I'm not saying that I'm a proponent of a child being involved, let's just say, with a euthanasia process.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that that has to be dependent upon the maturity of the child, and parents know that best of anybody.
Right.
Now, the one thing that I do insert a fairly big professional opinion is,
mm-hmm.
even after the animal has died, let the child be a part of seeing the animal, let the child be a part of having their time. Dr. Alan Wolfelt is my mentor,
mm-hmm.
and one of the things that he says that I think is so powerful, when we have a visitation, it's a time to back up and say hello as we prepare to say goodbye.
Wow.
And as we set in, and I've watched children set in with pets and heard their stories and heard their memories and heard what they remember and the, you know, whatever it may be, it's such a beautiful, innocent process that I encourage every parent, make sure your child is given the opportunity to be a part of that.
Wow.
When many a times parents would call me and they had put the animal to sleep while the mm-hmm. children were at school and now not knowing what to do. And I said, I want you to pick the kids up. I want you to take them home. And here's their homework, first of all. I want them to write a letter to me. And I want them to tell me about their pets and what they remember and what they're going to miss. And we're going to read that. The other thing I want them to do is get a bag. And I want them to put all the special things in there mm-hmm. that they think about when they think about that pet. And bring that in to me, and we're going to spend some time, and we're going to talk and give them an opportunity to give that little doggy a last kiss on the head.
Right. You think about how traumatic that would be to leave school that morning and see your dog and then come home, and it's just not there anymore, and it's passed away. And there's, you know, that child or even ourselves as adults, if that's the case, you know, it's like, you know, where did it go? What, you know, what happened? You know, you see, it creates all this confusion in our mind also. So I think it's very important to be a part of that process.
And it's very important, too. First of all, to be up front. You know,
I
tell you how many parents have told me, well, I just told them they went to the farm. We found them a nice farm.
Bought the farm.
No one that is wondering where the farm's at. Oh, goodness me. I had a lady that brought her kids in, and they said, I told the kids that you were going to do the final grooming, so you're the groomer.
Oh, wow.
No, we're going to say the right words, and we're going to do the right thing. Now, I also want to caution parents on this, too, because if it is a euthanasia situation,
mm-hmm.
let's make sure we use that word. Don't use the word put to sleep. Don't use the word special medicine. Don't use the word special shot. Don't use those words, because the next time we go to sleep or the next time they have to go to the doctor to get a special shot,
they're not going
to
want it.
They're not going to want it.
Exactly.
It caused a little bit of distress. Right.
Yeah.
No.
Wood for me.
Yeah. Exactly. Let's use the right words. And I've had some veterinarians and some parents that have even said, they've even called it put to peace.
Uh-huh.
To put to sleep. What a beautiful, beautiful way. And explaining what euthanasia is. The word euthanasia means good or fortunate death. Mm-hmm. Telling them we're giving them a gift. We're giving them a gift by taking them out of their pain. Mm-hmm. And so being up front and really educating children, it's a beautiful educational opportunity on loss and what we get to do to honor life and honor death.
You know, there's something, I mean, we're running a little bit out of time here, but there's something I want to mention, I want to ask you about. What else is being done with regard to, and I know I think I may have mentioned this in some previous shows announcing that you'd be coming on, but when we're talking about the end of life of a pet, and when we're talking about end of life, you know, this pet, we know the veterinarian maybe has told us, you know, hey, you know, your pet's not going to, he's not going to live very long. What are some things that's being done around the country with regard to pet hospice?
Wow, I'm so glad you asked me that question. I've been very, very fortunate to be a part of a movement of what is being known in the veterinary industry as the fourth stage of life. Mm-hmm. And it's this end of life that pet parents are saying, listen, I don't want to jump to euthanasia. I want to go home. I want to keep them comfortable for just, however long it's going to take. Now, keep in mind, pet hospice doesn't mean the exclusion of euthanasia.
Right.
What it means is we may want to be able to go home and spend some time as we get ourselves ready for what we're facing.
Okay.
Our pet comfortable and spending those few more days, those few more weeks, whatever it may be, that we can go home. And this, in the pet hospice movement, the Pet Hospice Association that I'm one of the founders of and an integral part of, is an association that really guides not only medical professionals in the veterinary world or in our animal world, but also pet parents on what they can do. Because sometimes it's, how do you keep the hips comfortable? How do you get them to take medicine that they're no longer wanting to take to keep them comfortable? And mm-hmm. we're talking palliative, not doing anything that's going to make it better.
Right.
Palliative. And so what are those things that a pet parent can do at home to, again, have that end-of-life experience that is exactly what they want it to be as they prepare to say goodbye?
Wow. It's a brand new concept, really, isn't it? Or
yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a movement that's just taken off in the past few years. But it's also much like when I opened the pet funeral home. It's much the same in pet parents turning around and saying, "Finally, where have you been?
Right.
Where have you been?
Right. I can definitely see that. You know, and I want to ask you real quick here. What about the Pet Loss Professional Alliance?
The Pet Loss Professional Alliance is an association that I helped found it about 3 years ago.
Okay.
And the reason for the finding of that association is because I wanted to make sure that my cemeteries and funeral homes and the highest of and the services that they're providing, and that's what the PLPA is about. So if you have any provider, check my member of us.
Wow. Colleen, we certainly appreciate you being our guest today here on Planning for Tomorrow, and we'll have all your links of your information up on our website, and gosh, you've been a great guest.
Fred, I appreciate the opportunity, and to all the out there.
We appreciate you being with us, Colleen. And again, we've had Colleen Ellis. She is the owner of Two Hearts Pet Loss Center in Indiana, and we'll have all of her information up on the website of pftradio.com, and we'll also have the planning guide that she's going to send over to us, and we'll have that on there also. If there's anything at all that we can ever help you with at Henson Mortuary with regard to pet loss, give us a call. And you're listening to Planning for Tomorrow.
Your home of the Cincinnati Bengals and the National Football League. Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930. WRVC Huntington.